This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr. and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Oh, hold up. Smell test. Go ahead. Sniff those pits. Now, your bits. Feet. Toes. Come on. Ugh. Could be fresher, right? It's all good. Old Spice Total Body Deodorant Spray is gentle enough to use all over your body, giving you 24/7 lasting freshness with daily use, from pits to toes and down below. So every smell test gets a... Shop for Old Spice Total Body Deodorant.
So on this episode, I'm joined by two wonderful human beings, my favourite set of brothers, two Leicester, England and British and Irish legends. It's the wonderful, the legendary Tom and Ben Youngs.
Give it up! Yeah!
Big Jim is wearing his heels, marching around the town to get some thrills. But it's time to go in now, and he's big and red. A shot of black coffee, now he's super dead. He gets loud. I'm a big owls. I showed him up some whiskey and he shoot it like a bomb.
Lads, welcome to London.
Cheers, Jim.
Nosebleeds.
Yeah.
Tom.
It's not easy for me, Jim.
No.
I've seen more people in the last hour than I have in about 2 months in Norfolk. Like, just the volume of people is just crazy. I know things are going off down here, but it is just a different world.
Yeah, it is a different world. Yeah. Ben, you feel like, you seem like you're more used and relaxed to this busy rock and roll life in London.
I don't mind it, Jim. It's an easy train down from Leicester, with Mark Harbour, actually. 52 minutes. I'm here, go across, get my suit sorted, come back, get to the studio. What a lovely setting, Jim.
It's lovely. Well, it is Tim Flutes. Nice, let's talk about that first, because people might be sick of listening to me, so they might not even get through to the end of the podcast. We've got a testimonial tonight, lads. Not just any testimonial.
Yeah.
We got your testimonial. It's on. So my suit is rolled up in the bag over there. Yours is getting tailored. Yeah. Are you going farmer style or have you
got... No, I've got one. It's not in the best of shape, though, but there we go. I'm missing a button. So you can't worry about things like that too much, Jim. Just, no, you know, well, as long as you're there.
It's not about you, is it?
No, it's not.
No, absolutely not.
I'm not saying we're not centre stage at all, so it's just fine. Just walk in and crack on.
How are you about being centre stage? Youngsy, Youngsy. Ben.
Lenny will be fine.
Yeah, Lenny, right. Yeah, we were talking off air,
yeah,
and you said it feels weird that it's your testimony, and it's rightly so. The amount of testimonials I've been to that you lads have always been to and turned up, whether it be during England time, generally a lot of the events happen around then as well. How does it feel being centre of attention, Lenny?
Strange, mate. We sat down 3 years ago or so now and said, right, you know, should we do a testimonial? We knew that Tom was sort of had an idea when he was going to finish. Obviously, that changed, but he knew an idea when he was going to finish. I knew how long I was going to be at the club. And we sat down and we decided, like, let's do it. And the club agreed that they'd gift us one and sort of got everyone together. And then 3 years later, we're finally here, mate. So it's been a long process, but having gone to so many other people's sort of events and then to finally have one that's for you, it's great. It's lovely. It's because I think that you don't see as many people potentially staying at a club for so long. I think you still do a little bit. Like, there's a lot of group of that Sarri's group that will definitely be there for 10 years of service and stuff. And I look at some of the young lads at Leicester that will probably be there for 10 years or so. But I don't think they're as often as they once were. So I think that's a compliment to probably a bit of longevity at the club and just sort of staying where we've always been.
Yeah. And what about you, Tom? The lights are going to be on you for the next few weeks. And I know, you know, there's been a lot out there, and we can maybe touch on the past kind of few months in terms of a spotlight, you know, social media. Yeah. But how are you in this kind of setting? Because you are sitting on the tractor now.
Yeah, it's been weird because I have been, you know, you go back to Norfolk and you're retired and you're not the rugby player anymore, you're the farmer. And I equally love that just as much. So it's quite weird to dip back in now, and it's a celebration of the careers myself and Ben have both had. And I think to have gone through what we've gone through the last 3 years, it is a very nice sort of feeling to have a night like this tonight. You know, people will be missed who've lost along the way, but equally it's still very nice to have the evening with friends and family. Many people have supported us along the way there, to celebrate our career, but also raise money for some charities which are very close to our hearts.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that, I don't know how far we want to touch on it, Tom, but it's been a tough few months. It's been a tough few years.
Yeah.
People would have been across that because it kind of played out a little bit on the media, the social media, obviously Leicester, and for all the right reasons, obviously, to raise profile. But, you know, you seem now you've got a smile on your face, you know, you're back on the farm. Like, how are things?
All right, mate. Like, you know, it's all swings and roundabouts at times. Ultimately, life's for living. I think you can get caught in a real dark hole here. Doesn't mean you're not hurting or anything. Doesn't mean you're not playing with emotions deep down and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, life doesn't stop. It keeps going forward. And you've just got to keep trying to go with it a little bit. And there'll be big wins, there'll be small wins, there'll be losses. And you'll go take two steps back. On the whole, me and myself and Maisie are getting on well. 9-week holiday is difficult. Very lucky to have family around me supporting me. Obviously, with the holidays, some holidays busy with harvest. So I've been on a combine 16 hours a day, you know, doing that. So Maisie adapted really well to that and had sleepovers and then would come back to me a few nights. But on the whole, mate, we are moving forward. That might change next week. I might have a really bad week, stuff like that. And that's all right. That's okay. But at the moment, I feel excited about tonight. Good couple of weeks into it. Family have been outstanding. Ben, Charlotte. I could name so many. Absolutely wonderful at supporting me and keeping me going. Because it has been difficult, mate. It's been tough. And I'd like to think I'm a very resilient person. And my God, it's testing me at times. When you just want that conversation with someone or the loneliness at night is difficult at times. You know, put Maisie to bed, come downstairs, there's no one to talk to. Mm. You know, and that sounds pretty dark, but that is reality. You pick your phone up, have a chat with someone. But still, it's that sort of stuff, mate. But on the whole, I'm rebuilding. I feel like I'm going forward. The farm's a great thing for me to throw myself into and keep myself going. And also looking after the mental health side of things. And I'm an honest character. I feel like I will say if I'm not right and ask for help if I'm not right. And I've done that over the course of the last three or four months. So, yeah, it's been tough, but we're rebuilding, mate, is how I'd put it.
Yeah, well, thanks for sharing that. You mentioned family and friends. You've had your brother alongside you, obviously, your whole life.
Yeah.
But over the last few years, it's been out there how much of a support he's been. And, you know, you've missed, you know, certain tournaments and competitions along the way. But you two have always been, I remember, you know, years ago, how tight you were as brothers, which not always is the case.
No, it's not. And we are very tight as brothers, extremely. We're very different in characters. I think that probably helps as well, doesn't it? Like, I love farming. You don't really love it at all.
But he loves London.
He loves London. We're just different. But that's good, Jim, isn't it? Because then equally, you get on well because you're not down the same path and like that. You've achieved things together. You understand things, professional world. You know, I definitely miss that day-to-day of seeing you every day. No doubt. That is weird. And that takes adjustment. It's been a year now probably since I have left Leicester. It takes adjustment, that. And there's other people there, but, you know, really, you miss your brother. Seeing him day-to-day, he knows when you're not good. You know when he's not good and you can pick each other up. So
no farming for you, Lenny, on
the future. Safe hands with Tom. Just never fell in love with it, mate.
No.
You know, I don't know what it was. I don't know whether it was like picking weedy beet when it's like horrible and wet.
Not hard enough is what you're saying. Yeah.
Getting my hat like freezing hands. I'm doing spuds, doing the potato grading. Yeah. I don't know what put me off, Jim. I can't possibly work it out, mate.
Well, if you looked at the way you two play rugby, it's very different, albeit very good in your own way. What was it like growing up as brothers? Like, you both made it to the very top of the top. How was it?
Do you know what? Like, I'm sure that a lot of people will say that they had a really great upbringing, and we had the freedom of a farm. And what I mean by that is you had freedom to roam. You had freedom to go in the woods and start building stuff and chopping stuff down. And Dad used to get the old banger cars. Basically, the old garage used to cost more money for them to take him to the skip and get rid of them.
Scrapyard,
yeah. Skip, yeah. Wouldn't fit one
Farmer,
in the skip.
London.
Mind you, Jimmy, Jimmy the Jeep might have fit, might it?
Yeah, it might have.
So Dad would take off the local garage. And then we'd whip around that on the farm.
We were never allowed two, only one.
Only one, safety reasons.
Two would ultimately ended up in racing.
Of course, or collisions.
Yeah, collisions.
You know, we had things like that. And I just remember just having so much freedom, especially in, you know, the holiday times. And we've got 28 first cousins. We've got a huge support network with that. And I just remember, you know, growing up as a kid, I was often spent with them and always doing things. So, very lucky, mate.
What about wrestling? Like, I'm fighting. I speak to Deeks, and there's this hierarchy in the Deacon family.
Yeah.
Like, you've got Lou Deeks, who's the older brother of Brett, who Brett says Lou's significantly harder than Brett. And I'm like, oh, I don't know, Brett, you're pretty hard.
I think they're both pretty hard.
Apparently,
aren't they?
Apparently his dad, Paul's harder.
Paul must be absolute nail gun.
Highest ass crack you've ever seen. He's got an ass crack halfway up his back. That's all I remember. Because I remember going around his house, he was playing with the dog. And I thought his trousers were that far down, I could see his nuts. But apparently it's just a high ass crack. So anyway, I don't know what
different
I'm saying.
Family members.
Just,
Still got your granny, the one that looks at E.T.?
No, she's gone.
Sorry to hear that, Jim.
It's one of them ages taking hold. So,
but she did look like E.T., didn't she?
She was Chinese, that's the thing. Because a lot of people, like, you know what, right? If you Google my name...
You got the old finger up.
Me and my brother used to do E.T. So for reference and for the people who listen to the podcast, right? As in, if you put my name on Google, I'll probably do it every day just to check there's nothing untoward there.
Just make sure you get the hits.
So Jim Hamilton fights, that's the number one. Jim Hamilton wife's another one. Yeah. Jim Hamilton podcast legend, another one. And then underneath that is Jim Hamilton, is he Chinese? So people think I'm taking the piss. Yeah. Now we're all talking about family. So people think I'm joking. So when, you know, we made some references during the pandemic saying China, because we followed Trump, who's an absolute idiot, and we started talking about different things. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, yeah, me nan, Papa looks like E.T., you know, small. Why, Jimmy, why you so big? That's what she used to say.
Yeah.
Used to say why, Jimmy, why you so big? People think I'm taking the pish, but I'm actually
not.
No,
I remember you telling me when we're in the dungeon in the old change rooms.
Well, talking of families, let's just part this bit.
Yeah.
So growing up was obviously class. Like you've got a good relationship. Your dad was a rugby legend back in the day, wasn't he? He played for England.
I wouldn't say legend.
Well,
but
he said he was. I spoke to him. He said he was.
He played. Yeah, look, do you know what? Dad's approach was very much down the sidelines watching and not saying anything.
Mm.
Not in a bad way, but he just wanted us to just enjoy it for what it was. He didn't want any, not one of those parents that like, you know, dragging the son down there to go play because he wants to live his dream through him. You know what I mean? Which you see a little bit, which is very sad. He very much left it to us to enjoy. Mm. And if we found a love for it, great, he'd encourage us. And if we didn't, fine. Go find something else that you might have a passion for. Very, very level-headed about stuff like that and incredibly encouraging and patient. So we're really lucky on that front. And like people always ask, oh, are you really competitive? Are you really... Like we're not and we weren't. Never, I never remember being competitive.
Well, that's smart by you.
Yeah, then, I mean, I would get filled in.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, well, yeah, we're not that competitive, you know. Tom's triple your size.
Yeah, yeah. Smart, wise.
Absolutely. Leicester, we were talking again, just to reference off air, talking about the way that the game is now, loyalty, professionalism that's come in. But you lads, I know you've been on loan a couple of times to the champ, but you've stood the test of time in professional rugby by staying at one club. So Tom, with you first, obviously I was there at the start, you as young lads. What an amazing club, and it's gone through its ups and downs, and you've been a part of that the whole time. But how fondly are your memories of Leicester as a young lad? Let's start off
back in the day, Jim. We had a crack, didn't we? We had such a great time. Great coaches. It was mad at times, though, wasn't it? You know, it'd be the most hardest training you've ever done. I look back on that, and that's some of the hardest training I've ever done. Worked incredibly hard, but were very successful. And I guess when you get a sniff of that as a youngster and you see the older generation, like they just want to be like that. They just want to wear that Leicester shirt and be that sort of hard-nosed character, I guess. That's, for me, is what I loved. And yeah, it's a club our dad played for, but ultimately it's a club I absolutely love and adore. You know, it is ultimately maybe the person I am today at the same time. Do you know what I mean? That is such a massive part of my life. There was ups and downs in it, but you forget about the downs a bit. I look at all the great times we had. And sometimes you've got to go through the bad times to appreciate the great times, but also to then get great times again. Wouldn't change it for the world. And I think ultimately, to be a one club man, I didn't set out to be that in my career, but the more I got to know, you know, into Leicester, the more I just didn't want to go anywhere and stayed there the whole time, which is something I don't regret one bit and loved it.
Mm, because the story that's out there, and it's probably because I've spoken about it on the podcast with Goody, is we played when we were younger. I can't remember if I played with you. You play with me. You can't
second
remember.
Jim, absolutely play with you, Jim.
Yeah, I don't remember scrum halves. Who like London? I remember Ard Farmers. Absolutely. But I remember...
I used to pass you the ball and then we'd have a scrum, Jim. That's what you said.
I was all right back in the day when I was younger. I could catch, I could carry.
No, I'm kidding. No, I do, yeah. Yeah. Actually, I remember... I listened to it before one of the shows and about the story coming back on the bus.
Go on,
and the old sick bag.
How good. How old were you that day?
Oh,
you were about 15,
18? 16. I must have been 18.
I say he was 15.
Oh, yeah, well, I don't want to get in trouble, but I must have been about 18. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I remember we played an A-League game one time, and then we went out after on a Monday night.
I remember you just dragging this plant pot with like, it was like a palm tree and a
plant
pot.
It was like 04 or something.
Yeah.
It was 04.
Yeah, and 04, you're dragging it across the dance floor trying to get out the exit. I've got no idea what you're doing.
Well, we'd suffered with plant envy and there was no plant. We didn't have a lot of money.
That needs to get home, mate. It needs to get home.
Of course. We were horrible back then.
But no, Jim,
We were, weren't we? Disgrace, Jim.
But no, I did. I remember certain games and yeah. When did you go after Lafreda? Did you go at the end of that season?
Yeah, I think I left after that season where I got...
Not surprised.
Yeah.
Like, that was hard. That was a hard season, wasn't it? That was a hard season.
I know Leicester after Lafreda have come good, but that was the turning point, wasn't it? When Dino went.
Yeah.
And there was obviously a load of changes, like Matt Williams came in, Lafreda was there. Yeah. I don't know who else has been in there. Heineken came in.
Then it swung to Cockers.
Absolutely. And he brought the old school back.
Yeah.
But as young lads in that environment, right, and... Tom, you mentioned it there with Jono and with Backy and the ABC club and that old school element. And you had Leicester and you had Wasps and there was this kind of rivalry stuff then. You had the London lads versus the lads you used to like to scrap and drink and bring it all back together at the weekend. Like that foundations as a young lad because, mate, you're the highest capped men's English rugby player. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like it's fucking unbelievable when you actually think about that day on the bus for the people who haven't heard the story is... It was the final that we lost in the European Cup, I think.
There was like Jack Daniels getting passed down, wasn't it? So you had to have a shot and then have one to the eye for eyeball pull. Remember that?
Even if you didn't want it.
Even if you want it, no choice.
The bus driver tried
to stop. Freddie Tuolangi basically told him if he stopped, he'd chuck him in the boot and drive it back himself.
I just remember Henry Tuolangi outside the sun. We thought it was a sunroof, but it was actually the emergency exit that had been thrown off smoking. And someone was like, Youngsy's about to be sick. He's about to be sick. And because I was a leader, because I was like second team captain,
absolutely
I was like,
well,
I need to deal with this. Yeah. Black bin bag, Jack Daniels coming out your eyes, coming out your mouth.
Yeah.
Sorted.
Mm. You thought, no problem. Chuck it out of the top, flipped over, straight over you.
Yeah.
Genius.
Well, the details of it, the sick bag actually got caught on the arm of a chair. I mean, I was there. I was lucid, so I know. And we didn't know. Like, if we knew back then that you were going to be one of the best players ever in the world, like,
crazy.
We feel like we've been baptised. Do you know what I mean? By greatness. It was mental.
No.
Absolutely. Like, the fighting and stuff like that. Oh. And I know we're not condoning fighting. It's 2022, but...
It's different now, isn't it? But, yeah back then, it was...
It was. Were you on that when we went to... No, you weren't when we went to Poland. We played touch rugby.
No, I was gone that year.
Yeah.
That was gone.
That was one of the biggest punch-ups we've ever had in touch rugby. Just we were only doing, I think Abo got pulled back or something, then just it went.
I feel for Abo and like that group, like even myself, because I took them skills, if you want to call them, to Gloucester when I went there.
Yeah.
Because Cockers and Darren Garforth started that. We'd play touch in the warm-ups to training.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember Garforth tried to touch Cockers, missed him, and then next thing they're arguing about who touched who. And then they're nutting each other, square in the face. Like, absolutely barbaric.
Mad.
They basically gave the skill sets for us to carry on.
Being, like, so young in that in the group when I was first coming through, Cockers obviously dragged me out to put the ball in for scrums and line-outs. Obviously, Hazza and the others, Frankie Murph and all those boys, would be in doing the gym and all that. So I'd have to go do that. And I'd just be stood there like, what is going off? Like, what is going on?
Julian White, Roundtree.
I remember the old, everyone remember this drill, they probably still do it on Sunday Rugby. Cockers, he's developed since then. But like,
hopefully.
The old, you know, the old draw apart against the shield, right? I had to warm up with the forwards because I was doing the units with you. Get this ball, Henry Tuolangi, biggest bloke in the world. Tall roofie lazy on his side, isn't he? Like, that's how wide he is.
Oh,
his head.
Best player I've ever played with.
Get this ball, sort of see him, think, you know, life flashed before my eyes, and he just stopped. Ruffled me on the head and said, "Don't worry." I was like, "Oh my god!"
Henry Tuolangi,
scary.
Whenever,
but what a lovely man.
Love every time.
What a lovely man.
He wouldn't speak to me in the week, even though I got on well with the Tuolangis. Every team run day, he'd come up to me. Shimbo's mum coming to the game. Shimbo's mum. He wanted to know if my mum was coming to the game. That's all he was asking every single time. Tom, I remember you as a young lad playing in the centre, and this is the story that I was going to get to a few minutes ago. Of you playing in the centre. Was it a final where it's out there that you broke your leg and carried on playing?
No, it was a London Irish. It was my
Boxing Day.
Details, but you broke your leg, right?
Well, yeah, I might have hurt it, Jim.
it's a true story then. Because
yeah.
I mean, you were in the centres. What I remember, so just to kind of lay the foundations, I remember obviously your brother coming through. Everyone was speaking about this talented young whippersnapper who's going to be in the London scene when he retires. But what I wanted to know about, who's this hard lad playing in the centre, which was you. And I remember you just being like a bull of a man. And then, but you mentioned that game and someone's like, oh, he's broke his leg, but he's carrying on. And you literally keep going and going and going.
pain got a bit too much, so that was that. But yeah, no, yeah. It's, but Jim, that's the first game for the first team. People like Martin Corrie saying, you know, you're right, kid. Yeah, I'm fine, mate. I'm good. I'll keep going. You know, it's only 4 minutes into the game, so you're pumped up with adrenaline. You just try and keep going as long as you can. And then ultimately, yeah, it was too much to take, so I had to come off, which was a bit gun-wrenching. But
yeah, we'll edit that bit out, because we'll just say that you stayed on.
Oh, I stayed on, Jim. Played two games until I got x-rayed, you know. So, yeah. But no.
But your transition from centre to hooker, people would think would be seamless. Now, again, because I had to go back through the archives, I thought it was Graham Rowntree that wanted you to do that, but it was Heineke Meyer
said it, and then obviously he thought it might work, and then Cocker then took it on from then on, and Wig was about then as well to help along. But yeah, just ultimately I'd love the physicality of the game. Centre was probably limited, you know. I wasn't starstruck. I would have been a really good club man, probably straight up and down, and ultimately there was an opportunity, and I thought, yeah, why not, let's give it a go, you know. Crazy it is, maybe, but I was lucky. I went to Nottingham. I had a lot of good people around me, again, who helped me along. Ravo, Slug.
Yeah, he was in there. Where you were sat the other day.
You know, and went off to Nottingham. Away I went, you know. Shocking. But, you know, didn't have a clue what I was doing.
It was the throwing.
The
scrummaging you picked up fairly quickly.
Yeah, well,
right?
Because you can just be aggressive in there. You can learn the technical bits to it. But if you're not scared and just throw yourself in there, you're going to come, you'll be all right, you know. And the throwing, that was the, you know, throwing's always been the hardest thing to do for me through my rugby career. Went off to Nottingham. Not often you throw a ball and it lands in the opposition scrum half's hands, mate. But
I've seen Greg Bateman do it against Treviso away. Genuinely, yeah, I've got footage of it. It's absolutely genius.
Yeah, but you're like, Christ, I've got a long way to go here. To be fair, the Nottingham lads were absolutely class to me. Rousey, Craig Hammond, you know, Ravo. Just, I applied myself to that club. I just want to get better and better, and did that. And I wasn't the best, but I gave it everything and played every single minute for about two seasons, and got myself in a position to then come back to Leicester. I went on loan there, and I'd come back and do my weights and all that sort of stuff. So I was working incredibly hard, but it's not something I was ever afraid of. I wanted to get there, and I knew to get there, I'm going to have to... You don't just do that by not working, do you? You've got to apply yourself big time and go for it.
Because as it accelerated, and we all felt it was the right decision back then, and you know, we ended up playing together, and it was the old two-step lob, and you know, just get me up there, boss, and then we'd go, and then it kind of felt like it would work. Then you fast forward, Lenny, and I'm watching you two in the anthems for England, for the Lions. It's one of these things where I'm watching this, and it blows my mind. And I know it's, you know, you need a load of things to happen. Tom and Max Evans, for example, I played with them. I used to look at them. You look at the Barrett boys for New Zealand. Yeah. I just find it mental how, in that point in time, two brothers, you know, could be stood there singing the anthem. And I find it emotional watching that unfold, because I think how proud families, parents, you know, your dad having stood there many years ago. Lenny, what's that like when you stood there? Like, have you had time to kind of sit back and think about how that feels?
Definitely, mate. It's... You know, like, words will never do it justice, and I know that people say it, but generally wouldn't. And it's a very emotional moment, because I always think, and I don't know what you think, Jim, but the anthem's a bit you can actually enjoy. You know, you're warming up, you're in the changing rooms, you know, guys are getting ready, doing their own thing, bit of pumped up, you go out. But when you run out and the anthem bit, that's the one bit you actually kind of take in the stadium, the noise, the crowd, and then it's sort of into autopilot again. So that anthem and lining up next to Tom and knowing all the work that he'd done from... essentially going through the academy, being a centre, to then having to start again and give up, not knowing where he might end up. And also your own journey, like whatever. It's just that moment, that isolated moment is just quite incredible. Really sort of, I find it very emotional. I'm quite an emotional person, but I find it quite a lump in your throat moment. And it's more the pride you have in Tom, and Tom probably has the pride in me, and then knowing who's in the stadium watching, you know, your family. And it's wonderful, mate. And we've done it. We achieved that. And
picture on the wall. What's it like, Tom? Is there a moment that you remember where you're stood there and you think, I mean, was it the Lions?
I mean, no, or, I think the England? The England, like, mate, it's just surreal for like me. It was just so accelerated, and suddenly be stood there in the opportunity and standing with Ben, national anthem, experience all that. It's something you never can be, it will never be taken away from you. And, you know, there's a moment when you sort of lean your head into me. And that was one of my favourite pictures of my career. It's just like, kind of like that we're here together, you know, and then you, as you say, you're forced forward to lines and all that. And it, some of it is a blur, mate, but it's just unbelievable to do it with a sibling and to have that whole experience. Those experiences are so magical anyway. And then to share it with your brother, it just makes it even more so.
I think that moment kind of captures the sort of, we did it.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Did you ever speak about it or not? Not in an arrogant way, but like, oh, how cool, you know, the old scenario.
We grew up loving rugby. So like, you know, that was our passion. So, you know, like any 8, 9, 10 year old, I want to be a rugby player. I want to be a rugby player. You know, like how many do that? Wonderful. You know, and then you realize it's not that quite simple. And then you get a bit older and you think, wow, you know, there's a lot of people that want to do this. What are you going to bring to the table that's different to someone else down the road and all that? But so the actual achievement of getting there, of course, we all wanted to get there. But when it actually becomes real, and that moment for me was a moment of, oh my God, we've actually achieved it. We've actually done it. We've done it side by side.
It was absolutely class. And it's class to have seen that journey along the way. You know what I mean? And play against you and play with you.
Yes, Jim. Yes,
of course.
Jim.
Yeah, I've got you. Played with you, 100%. I don't go back that far. I've got such bad memories because I was dragging plant pots through. I've blanked it out. Do you know what I mean? There's certain things that I remember and choose to keep to remember.
Yeah, no, you're fine, mate. The dungeon, mate. What a place.
Wow, that was it. It's a baptism of fire, isn't
No natural sunlight in that place.
Was it called the dungeon?
Yeah, so it was called the dungeon.
I think eventually
rooms.
It got called the dungeon.
It wasn't called dungeon when I was there.
No, it wasn't.
I can't remember what it was called. It was the
dungeon changing room, wasn't it? Or something like
just
that.
Just sap.
Yeah, where sap. We used to moan.
Sap changing
room. Sappuccino. It was one of them.
Because you're on top of each other, weren't we? You stink.
Just weren't a lot of room. Like your kit weren't like they were just young lads, just lazzing.
But
like,
wasn't it great? But wasn't it great?
It was class.
It was class. No windows. Yeah. No window. Yeah. Oh, nothing. No airflow. Nothing was it?
Yeah.
Just. But it's genius, mate. Like, I remember the forwards did some scrummaging. They went in, and a couple of lads had left their boots, but they were in the international, the big dog change room. And I remember knocking, opening the door, and then someone forgot their boots. You know. Get out! Lenny, get out! What are you doing in here? I didn't say you could come in. I was like, oh my God, I knocked. Like, yeah. But like, genius. Love it. And like, people think, oh, that's crazy. You know, not crazy, but like, people think, oh, that's a bit. And it wouldn't happen now because he's not allowed to do that, you know.
Got to be nice to everyone.
Well,
But then like, that play sort of teaches sort of like resilience, and it teaches you, if anything, Leicester just teach you, head down, arse up, mate. Yeah. Work hard.
Mm. I speak
when spoken to when you're a youngster, and just work hard and you earn your respect by how you go about your trade.
I think that stood me in well in my later things with off the field. I think that sort of hard nose edge that Leicester was then, like you, as you said, speak when you're spoken to. Don't go in that change room. You know, I used to be afraid to, like, if you were on the physio bed and one of the big doc, you'd get off. You'd be like, I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine.
Yeah.
You would be, though, wouldn't you? You'd go, honestly, I'm off.
Turns out Hammy's absolutely
but actually,
fine.
Then you had the fear of actually going on the physio bed because you didn't want to be seen as a young boy needing treatment, all this sort of stuff. It's the most weirdest thing ever, but I wouldn't change that for the world.
No, it's real, isn't it?
Like, it's so real.
The authenticity of what it was. Like, it wasn't, people talk about cultures and they talk... And I think now cultures are manufactured. Saracen's culture was manufactured to treat people incredibly nice and all these. Yeah. And it was wonderful to be a part of. But out of all the ones that I was in, the Leicester was the real one. It was just genuine. It was what it was.
So genuine. And you would have each other's back any opportunity. They wouldn't speak to you sometimes, but my God, if you're in trouble, they'd help you out. Like, do you know what I mean? It was always,
well, that was it.
Yeah. You know, you may have said hello to them twice in the season, but like they'd have you back in a situation or whatever.
Yeah.
I remember when I played for Scotland and all the lads in the change room that we were in were like, you've made it, you're international, get out. So I weren't welcome in that changing room.
Right.
I'm an international big dog, so I've gone to the new changing room. And I've gone in there, and then next thing, I've gone to get some physio, and all my bag, everything's been thrown out. They're like, Scotland doesn't count, mate. Yeah. They're like, 50 Scotland caps, you can knock on the door. Until that point, don't fucking ever knock on the door, you're not welcome. That might have been Martin Corrie, who is one of the players I've got the most respect for. He was a phenomenon.
Nails on him.
How we're talking about that, the good times lesson, there's been good times, obviously, since. But Tom, looking at your involvement with the highs and lows, taking over as the captaincy... And there was a real point where the club was going down. It looked like the point of no return.
Yeah.
You know, what was that like being in that space as well?
Horrible, because you think it can't get any worse and it does. You know, you're trying to pick it up, keep it going, but it was draining at times. And you always thought, like, it will get better. It will get better. It never quite did. So say you think, okay, now this season we've trained, done this. We'll be better. And it didn't. And it just got to the point of... completely broken, really, wasn't it? For whatever reasons, I haven't really reflected on that side of things. You know, there's a lot of reasons there why. I think we won leagues and maybe things weren't correct then, or semi-finals came all right, oh, we made the semi. If we had Manu fit or this player fit, we would have won. There's no guarantee of that. And you're just standing still then. You're not getting better. And then clubs just accelerate past you. And if you don't keep going with it, then that's what happened.
Well, it's like the Man United thing, isn't it? Without drawing comparisons to football.
Yeah, it is a bit,
but
yeah.
When I, from the outside looking in and being a Man United fan, back when they were winning things, I'm a Man City fan now, but back when they were winning things, it felt like they just, Leicester just didn't evolve. Like they carried on in this old school way. Yeah. You know, Cockers was still there doing his thing. There was a few changes, then Cockers was back doing his thing.
Yeah.
And that's what it felt like. It felt like, you know, this old school mentality, the game had just moved on so much and Leicester got left behind.
I think the game had moved on, but I also think people, you know, like I said some big earlier, like, you know, how that was for me as a youngster. You just couldn't do that now. And that's fine. Like, do you know what I mean? That's fine. So I think just the way that you deal with people and the way that people are. And I think when people come into the environment, they're not as resilient now as they maybe were 10 years ago from the moment they walk in, you know?
Well, life's more comfortable.
It's just different. And that's fine. That's fine. Because the environment and the way you coach and all that has to change with it. Because that's not going to change. That's not going to change. From my understanding now, as a senior player, I look at young lads and think, they're all talented, they're all that. It's just different. And you have to adapt to that rather than be like, well, didn't do that. You know, maybe Coley says that still in the corner. Didn't do that in my day, but you just can't be like that.
Is Coley talking to me again or not? He ain't, is he?
I don't know.
Oh, he loves to wind you up, Jim. I'll tell you that now.
Well,
when he went, get out, he didn't talk to you, did he?
Well, he didn't. Well, to set the scene, so I came to to Leicester Tigers to a documentary with Rugby Pass on the Academy.
Yes.
And obviously, I'm back, you know, I'm back where it all began.
Heroes welcome. Roll out the red carpet.
Yeah, I mean, we went to the, you know, put the plant pot back. I'll tell you that. I had to go and put it back. I've made it. But I went into training ground and obviously there's a nostalgia there for me. Saw some of the lads, but we were chatting and we'll talk about this, Ben, because it's interesting us talking off air about the media and now having to have an opinion. At that time, 3 years ago, Leicester were struggling.
Oh, massive.
So we're on the podcast, me and Goody, our old club, easy where we are, looking down, need to do this, need to do that. And I think I made a comment saying, Coley looks fucked, he looks old. Now look at him, he still looks fucked, he looks old, but he's unbelievable.
But he's unbelievable.
Still going.
At the weekend, yeah.
And I turned up and he was like, I saw yourself, yeah. I saw you as well, Lenny, and Coley didn't even, I was like, Coley, mate, it's your ex-captain, mate. It's your, you know, I brought you up, I
was basically pushing behind you.
I fucking breastfed him, you know, basically to get to that point. Come on, where are you? He didn't want it.
No.
When you look at that, and again, the media part to it, how, I mean, Tom, you ain't listened to it, mate. You're out as now as you ain't care. You don't care. Ben, London, you know, the media stuff that comes with the glitz and the glamour, that must have been an incredibly tough period because everyone is like, well, not just the club.
Opinion.
Coley's done, Ben's done, fucking George Ford's not good enough. Yeah, Ben, it's so easy. It's so, and like, well, then we'll go to bed and, you know, we'll wake up on a Tuesday after doing a podcast, all the people who write, put the pen down and that's it, it's gone. But how incredibly tough when you're that deep-rooted into a club to not hear that external noise.
It's really difficult. I think you've got to learn quite quickly as a youngster or any player. Like, you know, if you go looking for stuff, you'll find it. Do you know what I mean? So if you want to go look and find something negative about yourself as a player or your performance or the team, like, you'll find it easy. Do you know what I mean? So you've got to protect yourself. There's got to be an element of that. But I think for so many people, I think on paper, we had an unbelievable team still. You know, you got 40 at 10, you got Tamua, you had Manu, you had Tolusa Vianu, Adam Thompson. You know, and you're looking at it and you're thinking, well, how are they where they are? Good pack as well. Sione Kalamafoni, like, hell of a back rower. All these guys, Brendan O'Connor, you know, list goes on. But we just weren't, for whatever reason, mate, we could not get the product out there on the field. And it wasn't through lack of effort, like there was work going on the pitch and stuff. And then I suppose when you got that many big names and that steeped in history, you are there to be shot at, you are there to be shot down. And I think even like yourself and Goody, like you're associated with the club, like you care about the club. And like you've played for other clubs as well and you care about them. But, you know, you're probably watching it from the outside thinking, what's going on? Like, what's going on? Goody, what's going on? You know, and he's thinking, well, you know, what's going on, Jim?
Yeah, and it's easy to make a flippant comment.
But I think for us, it's just, you can't control that stuff. You can't. I think you just have to accept that the sport is growing. It needs to grow. People need to talk about it. You just hope you come through the other side. And we all did. And we stayed up. And season went all right last year. And went for a challenge again this year. But I just think it's part of the industry now, mate.
When you're in that period then, my personality, and maybe this is for the detriment of myself, I'll be like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Maybe not at Leicester. Maybe if I was at Leicester, it would have been different. But anywhere else, I would have been like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm out. Do you know what I mean? The direction. Was there any
Hardest thing is captain that, Jim, I reckon. When it's all going wrong and you've got to come in and bring energy and you've got X amount going off the field as well. And I think I always did that every single day. But my God, that was hard at times because it's all crumbling around. You've got boys who are not got contracts. Why do they really care? You probably were limited on numbers who had been there for a long time. I think the way the team looked like with numbers of caps, the Tigers was like us boys over 150. And then the closest one to that, well, I think, was Harry Wells and 40. You know, there was a huge gulf. There was no sort of middle ground where the academy had changed things and all this sort of stuff. And you had no of those sort of solid backup people on 100, 120 games for Tigers over the last 6 or 7 seasons and were, you know, cemented in there and good people, good team people to make sure the second team or the non-starters trained and performed on a Tuesday or Wednesday when you really needed them to do. And it was that kind of rot was in there and it was bloody difficult at times.
And were you having to convince yourself or did you deep down believe it or were you, I mean, it must have been, you must have had the weight of the world on
you.
Yeah,
I did. And I just convinced myself that it would get better. I said, it would just keep holding on. It will get better. It will get better.
There was too many good players.
Yeah, it was.
For it not to get better.
Yeah.
But the issue was we had also had so many international lads, mate.
Yeah.
So there'd be a way, autumn, Six Nations potentially, summer tours, come back, season starts again. Those boys are straight in. Play, away again in the autumn. You know, your international quality and then potentially inexperience in key positions below that. And it just, I mean, look, there's lots of reasons, but the pleasing thing is, mate, is we had success. We had a really crap time. As Tom says, now it's been good. You actually, God, you appreciate it so much more.
We did take it for granted because every year we're in a final. Some people go through a career and don't actually get anywhere near a semi-final or a final. Like we did take it for granted. I think actually the whole Leicester board, everything took it for granted because you just thought we'd get there. 13 years on the trot of making a semi-final Premiership.
Yeah,
it's actually crazy, isn't it? When you really think, and then boom, you don't make it. Like, what point does it, you know?
Yeah, of course. Well, the point was
that,
obviously last year where it all came good. And me and Goody were chatting about on the Rugby Pod when we're previewing the final. And again, the psyche says Saracen's been there and done it. And he put me on the spot and he was like, mate, like, who do you want to win? And I said, at that moment, I said Saracen's because I know more people there. Mm. You know, the fact that I had such a good end to my career there and everything they've kind of been through as a team in the media and stuff like that, I felt like I wanted them to come in and win it and say fuck you to everyone effectively. But actually, as you lads were playing and the momentum was gathering, I am out of my seat. And so you talk about the authenticity and deep-rooted emotion and love for a place. And when Freddie kicked the drop goal, I'm telling you now, I'm getting goosebumps now. I was like nearly in tears. And I was like, you can't understand unless you've been in that environment and watching you lads and watching, you know, the scenes afterwards. I know there's a load of different lads or whatever, but that deep-rooted authenticity that unless you've been there, unless you've done it, unless you've wore the jersey and walked the walk and played at Welford Road, you can't explain. And that, for me, just showed actually how deep-rooted I felt to Leicester.
Yeah.
And then watching, you know, if we talk about the final and winning it, I don't think many, obviously you were top of the league for so long and you'd found a game plan or whatever, but how does something get turned around? Like Borthwick comes in. Lenny, how's that turned around like that?
Do you know what? It was done, it wasn't just that season, it was done also the season before.
When you were getting hammered, weren't you?
Yeah,
as well?
We were. So we were playing on a Wednesday and a Saturday. We finished that year, didn't we, season? And then the season started literally 3 weeks later again. There was so much like foundations and fundamentals of our game put in place then. And although we were losing heavily on this, like everyone could see, I know where this is heading. Like I know where this is going. You couldn't walk till you could crawl. And we were, that first sort of sit was all about understanding about the players we have. How do we play the game? How do we best utilize what we have? What are our strengths? How do we go about doing it? So it wasn't, you know, last year was a product of all the work that had been done prior in terms of when Steve come in. So yeah, it was amazing, mate. And the final was, you know, like you look at, you have certain moments, I don't know, and you just think, will it ever be that good? Like, do you know what I mean? The situation with the week that we'd had, the moment, Freddie kicking it, the manner we did it with, you know, 30 seconds left or whatever, will it ever be as good as that? It's a bit like 2013 with the Lions. Like, I was there with Tom, Crofty, Coley, Jeff Manu, like all these lads from Tigers. And I think at the Lions, I think, is it ever going to be as good as that? Like, for me, you know, when I had the decision and stuff, and I like that was a that was one of the other things that like it's never isn't it, for me it's never gonna be as good as that because who I was with, who I was doing it with, family will be in there and all that. It's another story. But the fact is, it's yeah, the final I look at and just think, wow, what a moment. Like, I is that the best moment I'll ever have in a club shirt? Who knows? But right now it's hard to see past it being better than that because of everything that happened that season, that year, off the field, that week. Yeah.
Yeah, because when you were front and centre involved in that as well. And sometimes you can do the John Terry thing. You look at people and it's like, oh, you know, there he is, John Terry's up at the front or whatever, and he's given service to the club. But not just what you've been through personally, but I think every person, to a man, woman, anyone watching that, were like, that's the right person to be involved in that. Like, how was that?
And funny, Jim, I didn't want to do it.
Yeah, he took some convincing. He didn't want to do it.
I didn't want to do it because I hadn't played. I hadn't played that season. I'm that kind of character. I'm like, well, I haven't done anything. And you boys, there's a few, you, Coley, Genji, went ballistic at me. And I look back now, I'm so glad I went and did it. Do you know what I mean? I was so glad I went and did it. But that moment, I was like, it wasn't due to what had happened or anything like that. I was just like, no, boys, this is all you. You've done all this. Nothing to do with me. I didn't want to do it. But I do look back now and think, I'm so happy I did take the opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
And with what we'd been through the last 2 weeks period, which is all a bit of a blur, to be fair, but that moment you lift it up, one, it was huge closure on my career, I felt, Jim, because I wasn't going to play one more game. And sometimes you don't get the opportunity to play one more game, but it was huge closure on my career. And again, it lifted a huge cloud at that moment. With family in the crowd watching, our children in the crowd watching, you know, it's very special. And it was, again, you do look back on your career at these magical moments. I didn't play a part in that season. I did pre-season, but I didn't play a part. And I think I remember saying to Steve when he first came in, he said, what's your goal? And I said, if I can help Leicester get better by 1%, I will do everything I can to do that. That was my goal. I wasn't really going to get any better as a player because you're limited because you've got bad knees, bad shoulders, whatever. You can't do the weights. You can't get fitter or better, you know. And it was just about that. And I probably did play a part in that, and then to lift the trophy with the lads, a group of players in there who have been through hell at times to keep the club going and were still proud to put the shirt on. It was very magical, and it was a very huge highlight.
Yeah, it was absolutely class to watch. Or just to reiterate that, it just, like, normally as a fan of rugby myself now, you know, you watch the game or whatever and turn off, but watching the scenes at the end, it just felt real. It felt right and authentic. And in the middle of that, obviously, you've mentioned Borthwick, obviously Kevin Sinfield as well. I'm sure he loves you, Tom. I imagine just two similar characters, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Head down, get on with it. But you see him a bit on TV, you know what I mean? Mm. And, you know, I don't know much about him as a coach. You know, Borthwick's been a lot of the brains. Obviously, Geordie put a lot of that team together as well.
Yeah,
Jordan Murphy doesn't get maybe the credit, well, he does, the BT Sport guys, but
you'll
know what he's done for that club as well. But Kev Sinfield seems to be like a guy who people just want to follow because of what he has done in his personal life for obviously his good friend Rob Burrow, and that's still ongoing. But it just feels like, again, it's a match made in heaven. Leicester, the history, the authenticity, it's more than the rugby. Bring Kev Sinfield in. It's more than rugby union. He's new to the game.
Yeah.
Yet he manages to galvanise a team like that. What's he like?
He's just got an aura, mate. I always think coaches like salesmen's a little bit. They've got to pitch their idea at you, and you've got to buy into them, haven't you? So you need to leave that room as a good coach. You need to leave that room having got 23 people absolutely believing in what you're going to do.
Sold.
Yeah. I'm going to do it. Kev, mate. Kev could tell us, right, from set piece, you're all going to turn your back on the opposition, right? And you can run backwards, turn around last minute and try and attack. You'd be like, brilliant. I'll do it, Kev. Do you know why? Because you said it, so therefore I'll do it, mate. Ridiculous. But, like, he just has that aura, mate. You don't want to let him down. You want to play for him. He's got a great
very modest man.
Very modest, but very quiet. Speaks.
He'd be eight talking to him, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he does. He would, yeah. He doesn't feel noise. Like, you know what I mean? Doesn't feel, you know, he says what needs to be said.
Yeah, yeah.
He's really convincing in it. And you just want to play for him. Don't want to let him down, mate. And whatever he says, you're like, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah.
He was learning, wasn't he?
He was learning
backfield, all this sort of stuff. But he was doing it, wasn't he? Like, he wasn't scared to, again, like these sort of people, they're not scared to ask a question either. That's you know, do you think they know everything? They're clearly like, no, I don't know everything. I want to learn. I want to know everything, but I'm not afraid to ask questions and get my mind around it all and stuff. Yeah, such a magical bloke.
Eddie Jones, talking of magical, you must, Lenny, have a great relationship with him. And I say that because he's backed you, obviously, when things weren't great at Leicester. He seems like a person in the media that divides opinion. I'm one of them. Sometimes I love this bloke. Other times I think this bloke's an idiot. But everything you hear about him, and I was chatting to, just bear with me on this, I was chatting to Deeks about Borthers, and he said he's all about the players, but with the coaches, he rides them hard. And that got me thinking. I was like, well, that seems to be potentially what Eddie is like. He's tough on the coaches. He demands absolute excellence. But where Eddie might have it right is being able to manage players and have a relationship and do it his way. And that actually, you've got to have a huge amount of respect for. And I like that. I mean, you're obviously not going to say he's an idiot. We've got a World Cup around the corner. But no, genuinely, he seems to be very good for you.
Absolutely. I think I've probably played some of my best rugby under Eddie, really. His knowledge of the game, you know, he could watch a game now and he could break down the points of how, you know, their vulnerabilities, your opportunities against them within half an hour. His rugby knowledge is incredible. And then he's unbelievable at then getting that across to the players. Like I was saying, so I suppose like a salesman, he's unbelievable at it. But then he has a very good, like, we work hard at England, we train hard. Of course we do, everyone does. But when it's downtime, he's also can be very personal. You know, he always asks how my son is, how's Boris, you know, how's your wife, Charlotte? You know, all just little stuff. And, you know, for him, it's probably just a easy throwaway. You know, how's Boris been, right?
Is Boris your son?
Yeah, yeah.
After Boris Stankovic or not?
After Stanko, yeah.
Yeah, nice. Love that. That's commitment. And Boris Stankovic, big shout out, former scrum coach at Leicester. Is it after him or not?
No.
Yeah, but, I'm going to say this.
But just like little things like that, just personal skills, mate, that for him probably, you know, it's no effort, but it for me or for other players, it goes such a long way, you know. But like I say, his rugby knowledge is incredible. He sets the benchmark. He sets the mark in terms of going about, trying to develop, trying to get better, trying to learn new information, have the humility to absorb new information. We've always got people coming in, observing, and as players, you know, like, he's brilliant, mate. So, you know, I'm sure I speak on behalf of a load of lads because my interaction with Eddie have always been very, very enjoyable.
Well, it's generally the consensus when you speak to lads, you get a gauge, don't you? Of course, there'll be a couple that don't like him who've been dropped or whatever, but the mass consensus is that the bloke's a fucking good bloke.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So you can only go based on that, whether or not they've been dropped or rotated out or rested or completely gone, that seems to be. And one thing I did like about him was when he came in after the World Cup, and there was obviously all the issues around the 2015 World Cup, the profile around that, is he didn't just get rid of a load of lads. He could have come in. I know he did a few, but he gave guys like Dylan and Robshaw, he gave them the decency to play out a little bit. Let it play out a little bit. Let's see where it goes and we'll kind of, you know, we'll move you along when the time's right, but not now. And I thought, you know what, that's quite honourable to come in and do that as a head coach. What about the media surrounding it? Because it, like, and again, I don't know whether this is just an English thing. There's a little bit in Scotland, but obviously not as high profile because all that matters for Scotland is beating England. That's all that mattered. But as an internationalist there where, you know, people expect you to win the World Cup or win in the Six Nations, you can't go through in transition. You've got to be the best team or the top best three teams in the world. Is it harder at that level or club level? You know, when the internationals are on and, you know, you're a frontline player, highest capped men's player.
I think expectation is always higher at international level, I think. Of course, club is, it's you know, club is such a long stint. It's a long old season. But international, you've got these small pockets of windows. And, you know, for the autumn, for instance, you know, you've got 2 weeks leading up to the first test, which essentially gives you five training sessions till you play a test match. So time is paramount and getting together as quickly as possible, getting the knowledge and all that. So international is always more intense. There's more things riding on it and all those little bits, mate, because you've got a small window to gel, get together, knowledge, improve, and put it all out there. So I think it'll always be like that internationally. Will always be more microscope, media attention, pressure, all those bits, mate.
And are you happy with, do you like the media in part of that in terms of the way that they go about it or not? Like, it must be, do you know what I mean? Because we were talking, but there's this whole thing around at the minute, and me and Flats, he was sat in your chair, Lenny, and we were talking about the interaction with the media, the players, help growing the game, like content, the storytelling around that. And I just think it's a difficult one because, you know, the old school part of opening a newspaper and you're getting scored fucking three, well, I used to get scored 3 out of 10s, you know, playing internationals. And then trying to engage with that, do you know what I mean? While you're not winning and all these different things. Like, as a young man, you're young compared to me, but as a guy that's got the most experience in that England team, how hard is it? I mean, we spoke to you on the podcast with the, you know, and you're engaging with us and it's great.
Yeah.
How difficult is it to give yourself and to kind of be upbeat and happy and not that you are, but cocky and you know, like Genji, maybe throw the F-bomb around and then not perform at the weekend, but want to do it again and then perform and win the Six Nations. The highs and lows of being involved in them interactions with the media?
it's just part of the job, isn't it? Those interactions. And I think you have a responsibility as a player to share information and, you know, chat to them, whether you win, lose, draw, whatever, or you've performed or you haven't. You know, it comes part of the job. It's part of it. Like the one time I got it wrong was that South Africa, we played South Africa, second test.
What happened? Yeah.
I was so like irate. We'd lost the first test and we were up by like 20 odd points, I think, in Johannesburg. And then we ended up losing. Mad game. Second game, sort of similar thing happened. And like I got a tap on the shoulder, team manager was like, "You got an interview now." I was like, "What?" And they're like, "Now." I was like, so I ran over. And
with Sonia?
No, it was with Gail. Mm. And she's lovely, like lovely, 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 lovely woman. And never had a problem or anything. And I've never had a problem with anyone. But you know when like, so we talk about, I want players to be raw and show their emotions and do all that. And you're out there to win, mate. You ain't out there for any other reason to compete, win, you represent your country. It means everything to you. So if you don't get what you want, it hurts. And sometimes those emotions, like you can't, where do you put them? Do you know what I mean?
Well, there's not. Exactly. You're a young man.
Like, exactly. My point is, that's the one time I've got it real wrong and I put my hand up, you know. But other than that, my interaction with media, I've always just tried to, you know, like I say, I've always tried to see it as part of the job. It's part of the moment. And the biggest lessons there is just get your emotions intact before you go under the mic.
Which is difficult though, Jim, isn't it? And also I do find that sometimes they want to try and push you on that. Do you know what I mean? They want that rawness. But then when you do the rawness, you then get shot down for it. So it's a difficult balance that I think at times. I think that sometimes gets wrong. They almost want you, when you're sort of really down about something, you've lost a game or just lost, they want to poke you too much, I think, at times. And it's easy for them because they've got the real emotion to it. They haven't worked all week or worked all season, you know, to for that opportunity. And I think they want to, sometimes they get it wrong. And that's the bit I don't like now as a person who's retired. I don't like that. I don't think you should, don't push the envelope in that one section moment there of where it's so raw for a person who's trying to computerise the what's just happened and stuff like that. And then if he gets it wrong, you know what I mean? I don't think they should then get ridiculed for it, which I think is what happens now a little bit too much.
Yeah,
in my
exactly.
It's like, players have a responsibility to grow the game, yeah. Don't we, Jim? Like we do. Mm. You know, player appearance, all that. We have a responsibility to grow engagement, to grow the game. And I think also media do have a responsibility to get engagement, make the game seem exciting, even if it's not. Like, whatever. But there is an element of that as well. Like, we want rugby to last, you know, not just next 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, especially with everything that's going on, you know, which I think you spoke to with Dave last week, Flats. You know, you want rugby to last, but you also want people to be engaged in it and like it. So I think there's a responsibility from a player's point of view, absolutely, first and foremost. But I think there's also a responsibility at times for media to try and promote the game and maybe jazz it up a bit sometimes, even if it ain't that good.
That's what we're trying to do.
And that's what you're doing, Jim.
That's what we're trying to do. Jim. Absolutely. Yeah. One lad who's doing that at the minute is Ellis Genge. Yeah. Now, when he left Leicester, I was like, that's a bit weird.
Mm.
Even though I know his backstory, captain, obviously won the Prem, everything that's happened in the background. But having watched him, and we're recording after the first game of the season.
Yeah, flying.
After the way that he played for Bristol's and the emotion that he showed in that game, you're like, you know what? I kind of get it. And he's one of these characters that understands, I think, without speaking for him. We're going to do a podcast. We're going to chat. But Youngsy, he'd be like a player. Well, both of you. So the Youngsies, like, he'd be a player that probably branches about, like, across both your hearts, really. The way that he plays, Tom, yeah. Like yourself, the physicality. I reckon he knows Banksy, so I imagine he likes London as well, Lenny. Do you know what I mean? So he's a player.
Brilliant, mate. He's brilliant.
Tom, with you, like you would have played next to him.
Yeah, he's a great bloke. And like when he came to Leicester, God, he was a rough diamond, you know, and he was so raw, mate, and so angry and bits and bobs. And, you know, he always said, I remember reading something, he said something that I never liked him when he first turned up, and that's a lie. I thought he was brilliant. I just had to ride him fairly hard to get him to help him to fulfil some of his talent, do you know what I mean? Because there was so much raw, and you don't get people like that.
No, you've
got that C-U-N-T, I'd say, you know, that little bit about them, you're like, bloody hell, mate, you want that, you need that to be successful and the way you play. And yeah, so like, I've got massive respect for Ellis and the character he's become, the player he's become, the bloke he's become, you know. And as you say, at the weekend, he was unbelievable. It's so good to see him. Yeah, he just loves his rugby, doesn't he? Loves that physicality, that aggression, and such a good man off the field as well.
I'm really proud of Genge. Like, I said, when he first turned up, like, no one really knew too much about him.
Mm.
He was really raw diamond. Like, lads could see, like this guy's so explosive, so powerful. He's got that bit about him where
aggression.
He might lose the plot, which is great because you need that abrasiveness. it took a while to work out how do you get the best out of Genji, because I think a lot of the time,
because even when you praised him, he would probably think react criticism a little bit at times. Mm. But no, I'm being serious. Like, well done, or something.
But
like
But I
that.
Look at Genji and like it sounds corny as hell. But he literally arrived a boy, left a man, mate. Yeah. And I look at Genji, and Genji's like 25, 26, quite a bit younger than us. Like, do you know what I mean? But I don't look at him like he's 35 and done it all and like got all that experience. Like, I'm really proud of him. I'm really proud. And do you know what? The weekend's brilliant because he played so well. You know, it shows to me that that was the right call for him to do that. So good on him, mate. He's a great bloke. He is a great, great bloke.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think, again, we talk about the authenticity. I think what you get with him is real. I watched his interview with Joe Joyce after the game and there might have been an F-bomb or whatever. It's edgy. It's him. And you look at American sports and the athletes allowed to be who they are. Yeah. They're, you know, he's not media trained. He comes from where he comes from, his background. But he delivers on the pitch, but he's also receptive. And I think, you know, you mentioned, I forgot about that interaction that you had in South Africa. I think now you may be allowed to do that. I think times are changing. You know, if Genji comes off and he's like, oh, you know, Joe Marler's similar, like he speaks similarly down there. I think it's important to be able to show the person behind the athlete because, you know, the more I think about it and the more people I speak to about where the game is now, we play one of the best sports, one of the toughest sports on this planet ever. You think about what we've had to do to get where we get, what we did week in, week out, Lenny, what you still do. It ain't nothing like that out there. It's fucking crazy, you know? And part of that is you look at the characters in there, you know, all shapes and sizes. We all speak about that, all walks of life. You know, we're seeing that more. The mix of people, it's just mental. And I love how, and everyone's talking about Genji at the minute and there'll be more. And there was a lot of weight put on Maro's shoulders about him trying to take the game forward. And he might not want to do that. Faz doesn't want to do that. Owen doesn't want to do that. And that's fine. And we're learning now. I'm learning that, no, Owen doesn't need to do that.
Yeah.
You know, but Genji seems like he does want to do that. And let's fucking roll with it. Do you know what
exactly,
I mean? Let him do it. Let him go.
We can't make someone be someone they're not, you know?
You're only going to starve them, aren't you? You're only going to make them worse for that.
You've got to let him be him because he does it bloody well. No one's better at being Genji than Genji. So let him be it.
What would Borthos have been like if there was a tap and go there and he didn't score, if he was playing for Leicester there? And I say that because there's a certain type of game plan at the minute that is consuming the Gallagher Premiership, which is kickers and balls.
Yes.
Something that we spoke about off air, Ben. Yeah. Like, what's going on at the minute, apart from you've set a blueprint? It's your fault at Leicester because you set a blueprint last season on kicking the ball and winning prems.
Do you know what, Jim? Like a lot of the stats is that, you know, if you kick the ball a lot, you have a good chance of winning it. I think defences are so well drilled, mate. There isn't that much space. It's hard to get momentum. Once you've got momentum, you've got people trying to nick it over the top of the breakdowns and all that. The other thing as well is, you know, for instance, one of the incentives this year from the refs is to make sure that we don't come in from the side. So players carried it in, we've got to come through the gate. That's always been the rule. Always got to come through the gate, right? But it ain't that easy. You know, if someone's at the bottom of the ruck and they're rolling away or whatever, you know, jumping over them, trying to clean... Bearing in mind, not forgetting the bloke over the ball is being conditioned to be unbelievable in that position and very hard to shift. So you've got all that. Yes, there's an element of safety because you don't want people coming to the side and knees and all that, of course. But then that rule, because it's been heightened, it's always been there, but now they're looking for it even more. So yet again, the attacking team is
punished.
All the rules favour the D. So for instance, right, we want a pen, right? You got over the ball, you want a jackal.
It happens.
It does happen. You're guilty of it, right? I kick for touch. Don't know what's happened. Someone's got cramp, right? We go in the corner. Maul and Brawl. You lads are in there. You get sacked. Couple of pick and goes. Held up over line, right? So you've done unbelievably well to get in the 22. You've then been held up over the line, right? So do we favour the attack? No. I'll tell you what. Give it to the defence and let them lump it 60 metres with a goal line dropout. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
I'm like, that's again, interesting. Do you know what I mean? You're in it. Yeah, I do know what you mean.
So
yeah.
Like, you've worked hard to get there to attack and they go, well, we want more tries, we want more attack. All right, well, we got there. We got over the line. We got held up. Unfortunate. Used to be 5 metre scrum, so there's a good chance you probably will score, you know, if you get the ball out. No. Don't like that rule, actually. Tell you what, give it to D. Let him stand in the middle and let him lump it 60 metres and then start again. It's madness, mate.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm a professional rugby player, but I'm also a rugby fan, mate. I love rugby. That's my passion. I'm in it, so therefore I really feel the frustrations being in it.
So you're saying that basically the laws and the rules need to go back to going feet first into breakdowns to clear these fuckers out?
Not quite like that. But what I'm saying is there needs to be, I think it's gone too far the other way in terms of how much it favours defence, mate.
And what else would you do then? So, I mean, people would listen to
that. Can you relate to that? Do you know what I mean?
100%. I don't like the held. I don't mind the held up one. Whether, you know, maybe if there's a pick and go.
All right, if you're held up, mate. Right, you got to have a quick. You have a short arm, 5 meters out. Right, you can't scrum. You got to go quick. You know.
Oh, don't say that to Flats. But, don't say. But, I said that to Flats, yeah, and he won't have it.
Speed up the game, mate.
Absolutely.
How do you create more space? You need to create fatigue into the game. You can't get fatigue in the game.
One thing that
scrums,
Flats mentioned:
line outs, held ups. All this stuff, mate, TMOs. There's no fatigue in the game, so there's no space.
Very true. Well, maybe we are going down
like,
the road.
Don't get me started.
No, like, I want to get you started because me and Flats went down this line of problem. Like,
when I retire, I'll come back on and really...
No, definitely, you can open up. Well, actually, you've opened up more
really,
now.
I'll really tell you about the rules.
You've not got the rose on your chest. You've got, that's All Saints. That's All Saints, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's so edgy. You got All Saints
as
well?
I have, mate, yeah.
You have. But me and Flats were in here, and like, he obviously talks a lot and he speaks incredibly well. And we're trying to work out, right, so how do you speed up the game?
Yep.
And he made an interesting point around no substitutes. And I said, and he used Coley as the analogy because he was like, you know, Coley can churn out 70, 80-minute performances. I'm like, but arguably... Guys like Fraser Balmain, not that he can't play 80. Do you know what I mean? Or yeah. Petra, even if I played 80 minutes, you know, back in the day, it becomes dangerous, like, doing that.
Absolutely.
But I think people are looking...
It creates space for others.
Well, it does create space, but you may look like a fucking idiot as well. But is there anything else, Ben? Because I think you're in a privileged position to be able to talk about, because you're currently playing, you've got a voice, and players might not say what they think in that. And I think it is interesting that... The Big Gym Show has given you the platform.
To get my little bit of views out there.
There could be changes.
They ain't going to change, mate.
Oh, I think they might.
But like, even for instance, you know, scrums, right? So you have your scrums. I like scrums. Leicester, mate. We love scrums.
And your brother was living in them.
So get scrums, right? And they say, right, want to get the ball out of scrums. No problems, right? So why do you let the 9 stand between next to the 8 at the back of the scrum so the 9 can't pass the ball out?
I don't even know who stands there.
Right, some night, like Faf's a perfect example. Brilliant at it, right?
You mean to play away, because the likelihood is you could knock it on, it could be another scrum, so it's going
to
be slower.
Well, just what I'm saying is I'm trying to pass out, and then your 9's there, so you can't pass to your 10, because the bloke's in the way.
How hard is it not to punch someone if they do? My point is,
like, defence, again, they're trying to shut down because they don't want you to get the ball out and be vulnerable because it's hard to defend. I get that, but, like, can't we just favour the attack a bit? Mm. And then I think games will be a little bit more expansive, games will be a little bit more entertaining, then you get an engagement, then the profile gets bigger, you get young kids playing, boys and girls, and rugby becomes how we all want it to be, which is to continue to grow and get bigger and bigger and bigger.
You've missed a few steps, though, because the game becomes quicker. It opens up around the bodyguard.
It does, mate.
And little Lenny starts running around that gap there.
But, Jim, it becomes entertaining, doesn't it, mate?
It does, absolutely. You know? I think, yeah.
And even the TMOs, again, like, you know, they are important. They are. But, like, we just need to create a bit of fatigue, a bit of flow to the game, a bit of rhythm. We got a sin bin at the weekend with Fred. We had a good attacking area, right? But we're back down, 10 down, not much space. I just grubber it into the goal line because I know we can drop it down, which means it's a goal line dropout, which means it's going to take a minute off the clock. My job is to be professional and win games, and that's what I'm paid to do. And therefore, I have to be tactically smart and do that. But is that entertaining? Is that helping the game?
I watched the game. It wasn't
entertaining. Like, it's not, though, is it?
It wasn't, no. And it's difficult.
It's not. But equally, I have a job to manage that 10 minutes and try and waste a minute so that I can get Fred back on the field. So, look, we'll be here all day, Slick. But
I think
there's room for the game to really sort of get a hold of it now and try and favour more attack. How do you make it? How do you change it a little bit?
Is there anything else you do? Would you do what Flat said and drop substitutes? Which is interesting to hear because, you know, it could. Who knows?
I think there's safety, mate. And, like, you know, you need that. How good is it when you see...
I think it's an easy option, that one, isn't it? Like to say, we drop substitutes.
I just don't know if that would
maybe limit the substitute. I don't know, Jim.
I wouldn't do that. Minutes
I don't know.
Like, how entertaining, right? You're sitting in the stands having a pint, right? And there's the next Henry Tuilagi, right? And you know that he gets rolled out with 25 minutes to go.
The cheer when he comes on.
This massive... Large in life, character, big man, crowd favourite. Boom, they roll him out. You know, 55 minutes, on he comes, the whole crowd, here he goes. Can't wait, you know, like Genji when he's back off a kick return, you know. Someone, pops it to him. We used to do it with Logo Milopola. Like, the crowd, like, brilliant.
And the lads have been on their 80
minutes. So, like, the substitution, but again, like, you know, you wouldn't get that. And you know, you've got concussions, you've got all that. You need subs.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because, you know, but there's a safety element with all this, which we're not going to go down that rabbit hole because we have got a bloody testimonial.
Sorry, I feel like I've gone down the rabbit hole.
No,
there
that's
with
great.
My, with
well, this
opinions,
is
going to
go
mate,
viral.
But,
yeah. Mate, we had Luke Pearce there. Luke Pearce, he went viral. We'll say he was really engaging.
Yeah.
Quite, you know, quality bloke to have on and talk about it. But
they only ref what they can do. Do you know what I mean? But I just think it's getting to the point where we've gone so far the other way that...
Well, I'm glad you're talking about it now, because if I was playing back then, I'd be in hell. Like, literally, I'd be like, slow the game down, scrum to the cow sheds.
Mate, you'd be
back.
Fine at the moment, mate. Low
you
ball in play.
Break, no. TMOs, brawl. Mate. You're like 3 or 4 minutes sometimes.
Get
it's
your
like,
breath back, mate.
Sometimes you're going back and there's...
Well, Luke mentioned it, so get back, listen to the Big Shim Show with Luke Pearce, because he said that's the biggest fix for them.
It's
speeding the game
and
up.
And the way they have to like go through the whole thing and
absolutely. Well, we'll talk about it over 15 beers responsibly tonight. Just again, your testimonial year. People listening to Ben and Tom Young's, just give them a snapshot. Tom, you'll be all over social. You're on TikTok as well, aren't you? To get the promo out there.
Yeah, I've locked myself out of my Instagram account for about 9 months now. Can't get back on it.
There's not a lot.
No, Twitter.
Yeah, he wouldn't have had any messages, would he, mate? You know, what I mean? Just checking in if he's all right.
But what's happening this year? So this is the start of what's going to be
drilling wheat
a great
next week, Jim.
Is that what is it?
Drilling wheat next week.
I can't have wheat.
Yeah. Are you talking about the testimonial year?
Yeah. What's happening?
We're just doing this one dinner, mate. No.
What do you mean? Just one night only?
Well, I tell you what. If it goes well, Jim, maybe we'll do another small one. But no, just one night, mate. And it's been 3 years in the making, and our committee has been amazing. Adrian Lott, what a chair.
Yeah, let's give him a shout out. Who are you supporting?
And so, Claire from Legends, you know, Legends team, unbelievable.
Some good people out there, aren't they?
Mate, genuine, just incredible. Yeah. Like, above and beyond. Like, so huge thanks to them. My charity, chosen charity, is Motor Neurons Disease, MMD Association. My brother-in-law passed away with that.
Yeah, Slate's mentioned that
cousin
here.
As well. It's our cousin, basically.
He's our first cousin as well, so... a set of cousins married a set of sisters. He was a cousin and Norfolk. I just don't want people thinking. But so that's that, which is a bloody awful disease. And obviously it's you know, rugby community very aware of it because of Doddy, Rob, and of course now Ed. So that's who I'm supporting. It's a horrible, horrible disease, and seeing it firsthand and what it does. And the sooner we find a cure, as everyone keeps saying, the better, mate.
Mm. And Blood Boys, Blood Cancer UK is one I'm supporting because obviously Tiffany died with blood cancer, so that's my one. Which, to be fair, we've over the years now, I think we're nearly up to 100,000 we've raised for them now in Tiff's name, of Charlotte doing marathons, other Will Finley. There's
Will
loads
Finley,
of people.
Incredible, yeah.
So that's quite nice. So hopefully we'll be able to top that up tonight.
Yeah, well, class. There are some good people out there in the rugby community, and I'm sat here with two of the fucking very best, and I mean we go back a long way. Leicester legends, England legends, British and Irish legends, and to be able to share the studio and spitball that, we could have gone on all day. So we'll do it again sometime soon.
We'll save it for an all day, mate.
Yeah, we can. Then we'll come in.
We've raved.
Slippers.
And we'll actually talk about what that plant pot really was. Was it a plant pot? Was it a plant pot?
It was a plant pot. Oh, I God. Still see it now.
I kicked a hand dryer off the wall, I think.
That's good honesty. Good honesty.
What about you? Was it your 21st that was mayhem?
In Cov, Everyone had to wear Burberry.
Everyone had to wear Burberry. But also, was your uncle going to the toilet or something? Someone ripped down the door and he just sat
not
there.
Someone, it was Luke Abraham. So he's in the toilet and everyone's shouting, "You what? You what? You can. So my uncle David's having a shit on the toilet. Next thing, the fucking cubicles gets ripped down. He gets up, front wipe, just walks out. As that happens, Michael Olford has ripped the radio off the wall. Flooded. I had to go to court for that in court.
I knew it got flooded, I remember. Yeah.
Small claims court. Anyway, we'll keep this off.
What
there.
A story, you know what I mean? I'll keep that
there's
one.
A million
that's,
more.
You can go into that another million time.
Bringing
that
a book as well. Bringing that a book.
Oh, yeah.
Soon. Yeah, next Christmas it's going to come out, and there's some unbelievable stories about Ryan Youngs as well. Young scrum half from Leicester back in the day. Cheers, lads.
See you, Jim.
Cheers, mate.